Chris Jaffe, who came to Wheeling from Nabatiri, Lebanon. I was born on June 20, 1943. Lived in Wheeling all my life. Educated at St. Alphonsus Grade School, Wheeling Central Catholic High School, Wheeling Jesuit University, and I attended the University of Ottawa, the School of Hospital Administration. Spent my working career at Wheeling Hospital as Human Resource Director.
Can you tell me about your family?
My father came to this country in 1913. He was directed here because he had an uncle, Elias Jaffe, who owned and operated a store on the corner of 22nd and Market Street. That store became Meadow Vic's Meat Market. The community would recognize that it was a meat market for many years. My dad was 17. He worked at Wheeling Pittsburgh Steel. He accumulated enough money at that time and wanted to own his own business, so he bought a grocery store, which was later named Jaffe Brothers Grocery, that sat on the corner of 23rd and Main Street. Today it's Robinson's Collision Center. He worked in that store all his life. In 1920, he brought his brother, David, brought him from Lebanon, and at that time the two brothers operated that store. In 1931, a Lebanese family here in Wheeling by the name of Thomas John, my dad was then 30 years old, looking to marry, and this Tom John said there were young Lebanese girls, families in the state of Maine. So he took my father to Maine to meet a future wife. You know, back then it was a match made in heaven. So they traveled to Waterville, Maine, and Tom John introduced my father to the George family. The Thomas John and the George family were from the same village in Lebanon. That's how he knew to go there. So the intention was to meet and marry the 18-year-old. My dad preferred the then 12-year-old and then married my mother at age 13. Brought my mother to West Virginia and they raised their family here. Every August, my father would take my mother, who was actually a child at the time, he would take my mother home to Waterville, Maine for the month of August. They would spend the month of August there. She had several brothers and sisters. And that tradition of the month of August continues today to the third and fourth generation. We now have a place there. We certainly have a lot of relatives there. And my brother built a lodge to accommodate all of our family, which numbers maybe 30 plus. And we go there each August to spend time on the lake. The camp and the lodge is on the lake. In Waterville, Maine, which is maybe 20 miles, 25 miles outside of Augusta, Maine. I have a brother, Alfred A.G. Jaffe, who is a retired surgeon. I have a sister, Evelyn, who is manages the doctor's office. I have a sister, Juliet, who is living in Pittsburgh, has two sons. My brother, Al, has four sons. One is in Roanoke, Virginia, as an insurance agent. He's got a son, David Jaffe, who took his practice. David Jaffe is a leading hospital surgeon. He's got the oldest son is Nick Jaffe, who is a physician working for an insurance company in Pittsburgh. And Brian Jaffe, who is a leading prosecutor. Vivid memories. We all worked in the store. The store serviced primarily the black community. There were several blocks of residents for the black community. My father was probably the only store in the valley or state that opened 7 days a week until midnight. And he was a businessman. Spoke very little English, went only to the sixth or seventh grade, but was a smart businessman. His work ethic was very strong. We all worked for mostly anything that we wanted and needed. He major emphasis on education. He ensured that we worked hard in school, that we were successful in school. We were very close to that community. In fact, even to this day, we see and know many of the people who lived in that area. In 1967, the West Virginia Urban Renewal Council took charge of that area and they destroyed the whole area to make way for businesses, which today is still making way. They're still making way. But, we all work. I mean, the area was a very poor community. My dad used to sell a nickel's worth of sugar and a dime's worth of flour, and he would open packs of cigarettes and sell one cigarette at a time. This is the 40s, 50s, and in the 60s. He did this. But he had a very good relationship with that community, and he did very well with them. Mm-hmm. We learned how to interact and deal with people. It was a great experience for all of us. I see work there. Most of the, at that time, the 30s, 40s, and 50s, there were communities. Communities of Greek, community of Polish, community of German. And yes, they were centered around, they were grouped in areas of residence. And this is why the church is situated where it is. Because the Lebanese community was all in that area. There were three parallel streets of Lebanese people. So, we were all in the 40s, that was all the generation of immigrants. They were all immigrants at that time. And I'm the firstborn generation of an immigrant family. It was in, I think, 1906 that the community had grown so large with Lebanese people that they sent for a priest who came from Lebanon. His name was Father Paul K. Abraham, and he's the founder of the Maronite Church. He first said Mass across the street from the Market House. Were you at the Market House? Well, at the far end of the Market House and across the street, there were antique shops. He said Mass up on the second floor for many years until they had enough money to build a church. And then they built the church, and the fire occurred, and then the Lebanese Maharajan picnic evolved. Carol mentioned that. church, the church burned down. They needed to rebuild, so that's when they began the Maharajan, and it used to be 3 days, a Lebanese festival at Erwoodley Park, and all the women would go to the church. They'd do everything from scratch and everything by hand, and they would have a festival. That's how they garnered money to rebuild the church. The devotion to the Blessed Mother and the Feast of the Blessed Mother on August the 15th was the center focal point of that festivity. And people used to come from everywhere. They'd bring blankets and pillows and sleep in the church. I mean, nobody could go to a hotel. They all would sleep in the church for those 3 days just to be here for the festival. And so that was in, like I said, I think 1931, the church burned down. The picnic started in 1932, and it's been happening in August ever since. This year it's scheduled for August the 14th. If you come to Ogilvy Park, it's something. It would be something for you to see. Yeah.
What are some memories that you have of the Maharajan?
Well, as you know, as immigrant parents, we had a very strong Lebanese heritage and practice the culture in the home. My father would many times say to the four of us, there won't be any English today. As the youngest, I would struggle with that. As the youngest, but the four of us understood Lebanese well, at fluently. But my three siblings spoke it better than me. By the time I came, the parents were speaking English more. And then when my father passed, my mother was primarily always speaking English. But all the food, you know, my mother cooked all the Lebanese food. She learned from the wheeling elders because she was so young. She learned very skilled Lebanese cooking, very intricate meals and cooking. And, you know, we knew a lot about our grandparents and our history. And my father made an effort that we developed cultural practices and maintained them. Mm-hmm. And we maintain them today. All of the men in our family have married non-Lebanese girls. And it's an effort to maintain the culture. Consequently, my mother was a widow at 35. She married at 13. He was 35. So she was a young widow. As a young widow, she was the rock of the family and kept the family together by way of meals. And as the family grew, she continued. I mean, her home was the focal point of the family. So all the married couples would come for dinner and the family. She managed the picnic for many years. She learned and she chaired it and she cooked for it. And, until she became ill, she had a stroke. She recovered. She needed somebody to be with her. I was the closest in the Wheeling area to be with her, and actually had to leave work to care for her. In doing that, I learned all of the cooking. I was force trained to do all of the Lebanese cooking, and even today, now, we do Sunday dinners, and we have 18, 19 people each Sunday for the children, the grandchildren. grandchildren, and now their great grandchildren. And actually, we just met Sunday, all of us, the Father's Day dinner. So we try hard. We try hard. It was very difficult. There's a lot of young children. They schedule softball, baseball. There's so many activities going on Sunday. It's very difficult to keep everybody together, but we try. Well, traditionally, the Lebanese menu is kibbeh, which is a ground lamb, ground beef, mixed with a wheat, and then with a meat stuffing and pine nuts and onions. That's kibbeh. There's tabbouleh, which is the traditional Lebanese salad made of wheat and parsley and green onions. We do grape leaves, Lebanese style, not necessarily Greek style. We do cabbage rolls. What arish is called is the grape leaves. I think when I compare the Greek to the Lebanese, the Greek grape leaves seem to be primarily rice, and ours is either particularly lamb meat and rice, and or beef and rice. Magfouf is cabbage rolls. We do cabbage rolls. We have a chicken soup called Magalabiyi that is mixed with Asini, Gepepi, pasta, seeds. We have a shish badak, which is a dumpling with garlic and parsley and onion. We have a number of odd things with vegetables and yakhni. They call it yakhni, which is a mixture of a meat sauce and meat, a tomato sauce. You can do that with peas on rice. Hummus, you know, and eggplant, which is called baba ghanoush, is mixed with hummus. These are dips. The Lebanese people have a significant variety of meatless meals, particularly when we never ate meat on Friday. There were a lot of things that you did with fish, and a lot of sauces that you made with fish. We're very heavy on garlic. You know, garlic, I hope I don't have any garlic. But primarily that's our menu. That's, I don't need to answer that. Is it actually, speaking of baking, I'm scheduled today to do meat pies and spinach pies, which I didn't mention. We're heavy on meat pies and spinach pies. Baking, I don't do. Cookies, I do, only because my mother had a variety of Lebanese cookies. She made baklava, or what we call bitlawi. There's a ma'amul. It's a nut-filled cookie. You can fill it with nuts and or dates. There's ma'amul. There's sambuski, which is an orange-flavored cookie. There's makaron, which is a date and nut-filled cookie. And in the church, women of the church will do these and prepare these for the Lebanese picnic. They do that each year. So, but sweets-wise, I'm not that skilled, other than, like I said, cookies and bitlet and baklava. Yes. He not only carried Lebanese items, he and his brother, on Saturday at 4 in the morning, they would go to the meat cutter who provided lamb, live lamb. They used to slaughter them in South Newland. And he would be in the market house. is the market house.
Mm-hmm.
This very end of the market house is open. That's where his meat stall was. And he would sell meat to all the lamb, only lamb, to all the Lebanese and the Greek people of the valley. He did that most of their lives on Saturday. Because everyone used to go to the market for vegetables and meat and cheese, big, heavy on cheese. He and his brother David would sell meat. That occurred until the 1960s as well. And as a child, on Saturday night, when he would come home, he would bring lamb heads, tongue, brains, and my mother would, and I mean, they were delicacies. In Lebanon, mind you, they ate all the greens and the growings and they ate everything because up there they're poor. They ate everything. So we grew up on lamb, kidney raw, tongue boiled, and brains. And wow is right. I mean, and we all ate it. And when I think of it today, I mean, I have no idea how. And they would, they would have a bowl of lemon and a bowl of salt and a bowl of pepper, a bowl of garlic, and then this big bowl of diced kidney. And you pick up the kidney and you dip it in the salt and dip it in the pepper and dip it in the garlic and devoured it. It was delicious. And the same with tongue. And they lived long and healthy lives. You never heard the word cholesterol. Never. We would never do that today. Never. We do eat raw kidney. That's a delicacy. If you get the right meat, quality meat, you ground it 4-5 times, and it's puree, it's tasty. Then you mix that with a wheat, and with the spices in it, you would never know it was raw meat. I mean, it's very delicious. They will make baked kidney. I don't know that you have to go to an upscale Lebanese restaurant to get it. When my mother ran the picnic, that's what she did all day long. She made raw kidney, and that's what that generation, they ate it up. If it was done today, it would be eaten up because people love it. But there were people in our parish, physicians, who were concerned about selling that. But if we eat it, we make it at home, but on a large scale, you'd have to go to an upscale restaurant to get that. Well, there were certain items, that they prefer to have. I can't name them for you, but I know that calls for certain things that he has. Yeah, he would try to do that. And if they had asked for something, he would try to get them for it. At that time, there were four major distributors of wholesale houses where they supplied. There were many grocery stores. There was a Greek one, there was an Italian one. My father's brother Dave, he was a party guy, and he was a dancer. The traditional Lebanese dance was a dafti, a line dance. And because he was a dancer, and because he had no children, I think his wife miscarried too he lived above us, he and his wife. We all lived in the same house as families did then. The relatives lived all together. He sort of adopted us as his children and taught us all to dance. My sisters did individual exotic Lebanese dancing, and we, the guys, did the dupki. We all did the dupki. So yes, we were very well-versed in the dupki. My uncle's wife was from Chicago. He met her at a maharajan, which is a Lebanese festival. And he met her because he traveled to go to them because he was a dancer. He met her. They married, and you know, every year he would take her to Chicago to her family, and they would attend a maharajan, or what they call a hafli, H-A-F-L-I, which is a party. He was doing the dupki. He was leading the dupki. I remember he used to have his handkerchief, and he would tie a 50-cent piece in the corner of the handkerchief and use that as the leader would use his handkerchief. And as he was doing the dupki at this Lebanese convention in Chicago, he had a heart attack and dropped dead on the dance floor. That's how he died. That's how he died. It was a shocking time. And I was just 10. I remember when my dad got that call. But yes, we danced, and we still dance. And she's an excellent, by the way. Carol is an excellent single dancer. You know, her hand movement, her feet movement. And she had an aunt also. As I was a child, I remember she was an excellent dancer. Is that right? Children, we try. It's harder, but when they come around, you know, they're familiar with Lebanese music, and we try. The guys more so than the girls. There are more young men in the family who love the food and love the dancing. I mean, a couple of these nephews actually, I'll digress for a moment, the second oldest great nephew. 3-4 weeks ago was assigned to Orlando as a trainee for Siemens Corporation. He graduated from WVU. He's been job hunting. He got accepted at Siemens. In his first week, there was the killing of that girl. In the second week, there was the gay bomb. The third week was the alligator, and then he's been there for all that. He's sort of beside himself. His first thing about it. And they're more, though the wives who aren't all Lebanese, these guys, the family is more Lebanese oriented. This boy will sit down and eat 15 or 20 grapefruits at one meal sitting. All of the food that we eat, there's always a side of Lebanon. L-U-B-A-N, which is yogurt. We've been heavy on yogurt all our lives between the American, before the American community was ever familiar with it.
I know, even when I was young, I remember it being like,
really?
It just wasn't
awesome. Yeah, and we make our own. You know, we actually, when we go to Maine every August, or we go to Florida, wherever we go, and we're going to be there for a while, we always take a container of the starter. You have to have a starter to make it. So we take our own because it's sour. It's bitter. We take it with us, and then we make our own yogurt where we it, and as soon as it's made or it's gelled, then I top it with with a dozen paper towels, and it absorbs all the liquid. So that's how we strain it. My mother used to put it in a bag and hang it on the spigot, and you know, just kind of, but we eat it too quickly for it to be like cheese. We put some aside, and a couple of the people in the family, it will solidify, and then they use it as bread, like a cheese bread. Yeah, it's very good.
What is the definition
of the there's probably a handful of immigrants. I can only think here, right here in the valley, in the valley, it's minimal. But I have, excuse me, my parents and I went to Lebanon in 1967. My mother met all of her aunts and uncles. She had five aunts and two uncles. A couple of the aunts and the uncles were younger than her. In the early 1900s, a man brought his two daughters to the state of Maine to make a better life. He brought them to Maine because Portland was a port of entry, as was Ellis Island. So many people, and many Lebanese people, immigrated to New England. It's a very, very heavy Lebanese population in New England because of Portland and because of the Scott paper mills and fabric shirt factories. They had a lot of factories in New England. This man came, he left two daughters there. He came there because many, many years before, somebody from that village came to Maine. He left his two daughters there to work in the factory, and he went back to Lebanon and never saw them again. That's the way they did it, because they thought a better life. So now here are two sisters in Maine from a village called Sabah. So now in Wheeling, there's a man named Thomas John from Sabah. So Tom Sabah brings his sister and her family here to Wheeling. She has five children. They were here for 3 months. She died of influenza. A week later, he died of influenza, and then within the same week, a child died. Now, Tom has four children from his sister. So he goes to Maine because there's two women from his village. He marries this one, brings her back to Wheeling. She raises those four children and has five. 15 years later, my dad comes to West Virginia. He's looking for a wife. Tom John says, oh, I have a sister-in-law in Maine. She has five daughters. I'll take you there. That was my mother. That's how that happened. That's how that happened. So you're asking me about New England. So they have a large community. So now we go to Lebanon. We meet all these relatives, my dad's brothers and sisters that he never met. Now we have an acquaintance with these people. So over the years, they send my cousins here. They live with us. We educate them. Now they're in Boston and they're in Virginia. So so we've got that connection. So here, there are no more immigrants. They have all passed. But you look at other cities, major cities, there are large communities still coming. Of my generation, there are many. Of my generation speaking Lebanese, it's minimal. Understanding it, probably much better. But there's not much of it. You look at our church on Saturday, it's packed with non-Lebanese. They love the priest. They love the priest. They love the 4:30 mass, the 4 o'clock mass. It's mostly non-Lebanese. And they sort of like the tradition of the Maronite Arabic-speaking mass. It's 50-50 on Saturday. There aren't that many, unfortunately. There aren't that many. Well, maybe 15 years ago, the local bishop closed the Italian church, closed the Polish church. They got so angry. They felt that the bishop was closing the church because he wanted all these people to migrate to the cathedral. They didn't migrate to the cathedral. They migrated to South Wheeling, our church, which is a Catholic. It's true. It's just like the Roman Catholic Church.
So there are
not many young, no.
What about other communities?
Yeah, I mean, I think many who have sought out an education have been forced to move out of the valley. The jobs here are minimal. You know, the city was primarily steel and coal. There's not much professional positions for the college graduates. Just like my nephew, like all of my nephews and my great nephews, they've all migrated elsewhere. They've had to go elsewhere. So it's minimal. I think probably what's encouraged is the food. Anybody of a mixed family, meaning a Lebanese and a non, they try to incorporate the food somehow, from somewhere. The Duffy and the Fadul family have that Lebanese restaurant, and there are several Lebanese restaurants in Pittsburgh that are very, very, very popular. Pittsburgh has a heavy population. Well, we don't usually eat out because we know how to make all the food. Yeah, we do make the food. I myself, each year, I'll pick 3,000 or 4,000 grape leaves, and I have them for not only the year. Today I'm using the leaves from 2012 that I picked. I pick them, I package them, and I freeze them, and I have them. And when the church has a function, we have a volume of leaves. We have our own vine in our yard. Backyard. Oh, well, I mean, there's a fence like this, and, you know, the vines grow, cover the whole fence. So I could pick 200-300 in a day. You know, and what's really best is after a heavy rain, the leaves are clean, they're lush, that's when you pick them. No. It's, according to my mother, the grapevine that doesn't produce grapes has a more tender leaf, and that's what we have.
Okay.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. speaking of wine, my grandmother, you know what ouzo is?
Mm-hmm.
The Lebanese form of ouzo is called arak, A-R-A-K, arak. It's, you know, it's like water. It's all anise flavor. And my grandmother, who had 8 children, and she made arak, having learned it from Lebanon, and this was during the Depression. And when the inspectors would come to inspect her house, she would hide the arak bottles in bed with the children who were sleeping, because the police would never touch and bother the children. They had an apparatus where they crushed grapes, and it dripped. You know, it's a very slow drip, and it was a very I've seen it in pictures. It was gone in my day, but it's a very intricate. It was like a conveyor of dripping and filtering. It's a major filtering system, but it ended up clear anise flavored liquid, and we drink it today. You know, you can get it at a local liquor store. Yeah, you can. It's imported. Yeah, it is imported from Lebanon. My brother and I primarily tried to impose on them their roots and who everybody is, and to familiarize ourselves, you know. And we share all this information. These are the documents. All of the nephews of the next generation have this information. They have it at some point in their lives. They're going to want to do a family tree. And I mean, this is the document from the ship that my dad came over. And when we searched this out, we found that his aunt and cousin came with him. And the aunt had to go back because she had something wrong with her eyes. They sent her back.
Yeah.
Something that they thought was infection. They marked you with a white X at Ellis Island, and I mean, she had to turn around and go back and leave the child and my dad, age 17. She had to leave them at Ellis Island. She was the sister of the Elias who had the market. I mean, they were coming to Wheeling because Elias was here, but they had to send her back. And those are the things we discovered from all of this.
Yeah.
Yes. Let me see if I have that. I have it somewhere. She knew that. Mike is the son of the the man, Mike is the son of the man who signed my father's naturalization.
Oh, good. Okay, yeah. Wow.
Can you imagine? Look at the document. I mean, look at this. This is from Lebanon. And it's because my dad needed proof of his age. And this was done in 1960. Okay. And when my dad got it, and he needed a birth certificate for some reason or other. Now, my father was 70-something. He left Lebanon at 16. He saw on here the signature of the bishop who taught him when he was in the fourth grade. This is the signature, you know, I remember when my dad saw this, he started to cry. Isn't that something? And I mean, these are documents of my dad's naturalization.
Okay.
Naturalization papers, you've seen that. And these are the petitions for my father and my uncle.
Okay.
And Joe Montour was the witness for petitioning my dad. And these are named names. When I say named, not that they were rich politicians, merchants, but they were all immigrants. And these two people were from my dad's village, but were here before him. So they were witnesses when my Uncle Dave came over in 1920. Yes. Did you really?
Yeah.
And I never really knew if they already, but Hadad is
not, a... I didn't ask his parents, but...
How did you hook up with him?
You know Ginger Kapala? She's like back in... Maybe I was meeting her, and then someone who was a puppet society, and he was there. I think he's a cooker.
Arabic name.
Sure. Yeah,
and I know the Mrs. Haddad because I know her as the owner. I see her all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I really never knew that maybe her husband is of an Arabic background.
Are there also
Germans? There were Syrians in Ohio.
Okay.
Probably, you know, way back when everybody was Syrian.
Right. Yeah.
Everybody was. But after the war in the 40s,
mm-hmm.
and then the French took over Lebanon,
mm-hmm.
then the Lebanese wanted to be Lebanese, and the Syrians. Lebanese are primarily, the people who call themselves Lebanese are Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Syrians are Orthodox Christian, primarily. I think that's the difference. We don't even like to say Syrian bread anymore. We like to say Lebanese bread. This I'd like to show you. This is the 1920 census over.
Wow.
That's why she brought the son over, because the mother died.
Wow.
And he was just a child of, he was a young boy. He was a little boy. So she had to go back, and he had the boy. And then he got married. Then he died of a heart attack at age 32.
Oh my gosh.
And he had two children who are now in, one is in Roanoke and one is in Cincinnati.
Okay. And is Gaff, is that how your name was spelled before?
It's spelled, when my dad sent, the correct Lebanon spelling is G-H-A-F-A-R-I.
Okay.
My dad came to Ellis Island. It was G-H-A-P-H-E-R-Y.
That sounds more foreign.
It sounds Irish.
Yeah.
I mean, many people think,
well,
that
maybe
Irish.
That's what it, that it is.
It's G-H-A-F-A-R-I. And you can imagine how difficult it was to find stuff about the Gaffer.
Right.
And going into the record. This is 1920, and it's David. Oh, here. G-A-F-A-R-I.
Yeah.
Ibrahim. Every son's, it's David. My father is Nicholas Ibrahim.
Yeah.
And David Ibrahim. They all have to take the name of their father.
Okay.
That's Ibrahim or Abraham. He was 20. He was a workman. He came from Nabatiyu. His father is Habib. He's coming to Wheeling. He's the brother of Nick Gaffrey, Nicholas Gaffrey, and Wheeling. You know, you have to have somebody here in order to come here.
Mm-hmm.
And he had $80 in his pocket when he was on the ship. The brother. And that he was going to his brother's at 2300 Main Street. That was my dad's store. And this is the picture of the ship that he came over on.
Wow. So did they go to first?
They had to go from Beirut to La Havre.
Okay.
La Havre, France.
Okay.
The docking place.
Okay.
And the ship's dock. And then from La Havre to either Portland, Maine on the east coast, or New York City on the east coast. I didn't bring these for you. I brought these. But here is the picture of Sunday dinner.
Oh, wow.
That's the gang. That's my brother's home. But all of them are not there on the usual Sunday dinners. The usual Sunday dinners that are at my house or my mother's house. This is my sister. This is Juliet and her two sons.
Okay.
He's in Washington, D.C. He's in Wilmington, Delaware. They're both civil engineers. He rebuilt the Pentagon after 9/11. That's you and his little baby. That's his wife and little baby. This is my brother.
Okay.
He's great with history.
Right.
He's great with Lebanese tradition. He's great with the stories that my dad embedded in us about future and family and future and future.
And
my brother we can talk about this stuff.